break here. I don't think we have any preliminary matters, so let's just get started with our first case, 22-9546, Center for Biological Diversity versus EPA. Mr. Yu Kiley, you may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, and may it please the court, Robert Yu Kiley on behalf of petitioner at the Center for Biological Diversity. Before I jump into the first argument about how EPA's approval of exempting temporary emissions was not allowable, I do want to start with two pieces of context. The first is in the cooperative federalism system that the Clean Air Act creates, where both the state and the federal government have a role, EPA is the backstop in that system, meaning if things aren't working out, the Clean Air Act assigns the role to EPA to be the ultimate solution. And things, the second point is things are not working out. Five times EPA has set a date for the Metro Denver North Front Range area to come into attainment, which is basically bring their pollution levels below the standard that EPA has set. And five times that's failed to happen. Twice, EPA explicitly made a finding that Colorado's program or plan would bring the area into attainment, and they were demonstrably wrong. So within that context, I'll jump in to the first argument. The program for permitting in this non-attainment area, permitting stationary sources of pollution in the area that violates the standard, in that EPA approved includes an exemption for temporary emissions. Nowhere in the rule or the test is Colorado's program as stringent as EPA's regulations? Nowhere in EPA's regulations is that temporary exemption for temporary or emissions resulting from temporary activity.
Should we defer to EPA's interpretation of the Colorado regulations as meeting the statutory and federal regulatory requirements?
I'm sorry.
Should we defer to their judgment that this is a satisfactory interpretation of EPA law?
No, you should not. And there are several reasons for that. First is the plain language, which the cases like Kazor hold that you only have to defer to genuine ambiguity. There's no ambiguity here.
You're saying there's no ambiguity. Could you be precise? Are you talking about in the potential to admit and that definition, or are you talking about what ultimately the EPA said they were interpreting, which was whether this felt temporary emissions fell within secondary emissions?
Well, there's no ambiguity in potential to emit. There's no ambiguity in the definition of secondary emissions, which is their hook to get
right
into.
Right.
And there's no ambiguity that the term temporary emissions doesn't exist. So
if you're engaged in construction, doesn't that imply a temporal limitation? You know, construction begins and ends. You know, that it's temporary in that respect.
Correct.
What you finish with is a major stationary source, right?
Well, first, as you held in the Oklahoma Gas and Electric, this is a pre-construction program. You need to get your permit prior to commencing construction. And no one disputes that. EPA says that in the brief, but you also held that in the Oklahoma gas case. So the requirements don't kick in. And then it's made perfectly clear in the definition of secondary emissions. The definition from EPA's regulations of secondary emissions say emissions which would occur as a result of the construction or operation of a major stationary source or major modification, but do not come from the major secondary source or the major stationary source or major modification itself. So read the other way, what that's saying is that if emissions from construction, which is in the plain language there, come from the stationary source itself, then they're not secondary emissions, so they're not excused.
Could you give us an example of that?
Yes, Your Honor. I think the best example is a well to extract oil and gas. So when they are constructing the well, and it's actually a well pad, and there'll be multiple wells on it, when they're constructing it, they're, you know, drilling a hole in the ground. And while they're constructing it, both while they're drilling it and then when they frack it, when they complete it, pollution comes out of the well. But the well is the stationary source itself. So I think that's the clearest example.
Well, it's a stationary source from the moment of construction?
Correct, Your Honor.
And then during construction, they go through this completion phase, and then it's operational. So you're saying it's a major stationary source from the commencement of the drilling operation.
I mean, if it is indeed a major stationary source.
Why isn't that excluded under the definition of potential to emit, which excludes secondary emissions, which excludes construction?
Well, as I just read, the definition of secondary emissions, which is in page 5 of the appendix in EPA's brief, it does not exclude construction emissions if it comes from the major stationary source itself. It explicitly says emissions which would result from the construction or operation, but does not come from the stationary source itself is excluded. But if emissions during construction comes from the stationary source, then based on the plain language, then it is not a secondary emission, and therefore it doesn't get excluded from potential to emit.
Are you saying that the temporary emissions then would be conflicting with the second part of the secondary emissions, the exception to that, which do not come from the major stationary source or major modification itself? Are you saying that the state's use of the term temporary emissions conflicts with that?
Exactly.
And would accept something, would include something as a secondary emission that shouldn't be included?
Correct.
Okay.
Including, again, the example we keep going back to is the drilling, the fracking, and the completion of the wells. Colorado never includes those emissions in determining whether a source is a major source.
Aren't those emissions regulated under a different program?
They are, Your Honor. They're regulated under new source performance. Well, some of them are, some of them aren't. If you look at the amicus brief, they say that completion and flowback are. They don't say that the actual fracking is. And fracking is a particularly problematic a particularly important problem because it is temporary, but it occurs during construction. But then sometimes they refrack a well down the road. So when they're, meaning a couple of years later, they will refrack a well, and they will exclude those emissions because they're temporary, although really it's not construction. I mean, at that
when the well is completed, is it deemed a major stationary source under the EPA's interpretation and Colorado's? A completed well, is that a major stationary source?
Sure. Just to clarify, completion is a term of art,
right,
or a technical term. But I think you're saying once there are...
It's everything, the
right.
Fencing's down and the pumps are going.
Yeah. So that's the EPA's position, is you only start counting emissions once it's in normal operation.
But it is regulated as a major stationary source at that point.
Well, no.
Depending on the
amount of reality is Colorado has never determined that any source in the non-attainment area is a major stationary source. And that is a big reason why we've had these five failures of it's like death by a thousand cuts. They issue thousands and thousands of minor source permits.
Is there an activity, construction activity other than drilling that creates this same problem that you've asserted here?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor. For example, I worked on coal-fired power plants for a couple of decades, and I never made this argument in that context. Because the emissions during construction of a modification of a coal-fired power plant would be measured in grams. It's basically like the pollution coming off of the acetylene torch when they're doing the welding. But in Colorado, where the majority of the pollution in the non-attainment area is coming from the oil and gas extraction industry, it's particularly important to close this loophole. I did want to reserve 3 minutes of my time, but I'm happy to...
Yeah, I'll give you some rebuttal, but before you sit down, what's the major flaw on the other issue involving the internal combustion engine? What you think your strongest point is.
It's similar. There's an exception to the exception in non-road engines, which is the defined term that EPA relies on. There's an exception to that for engines that are subject to new source performance standards, which is pretty much all the engines. Again, the amicus say that in their brief, that the engines they use are subject to new source performance standards. But what is in Colorado's regulations, an engine on a vehicle does not have that same carve-out. It's a much broader term than what's in the EPA's regulations. And then as to the not providing notice that allows us reasonable opportunity, it's really simple. This case is about the regulatory interpretation. EPA did not tell the public where it could find the relevant regulations. And it's just super important to keep in mind that the regulations are always changing.
Counsel, may I ask you a predicate question about your notice argument? What is the source of authority that we need to look at to determine whether the notice was sufficient in this case?
It's the Administrative Procedure Act.
The reason I'm asking you this question is because your friends on the other side say that the nature of the rulemaking here obviated the need for or the nature of the action here obviated the need for putting in the full text as you would want them to, that because it was the specific type of approval of the certification and so forth. That is that what we should be looking at? Is the nature of the action should determine what the notice should be?
In the sense that you need to know what the underlying data is, so the nature of the action does inform what the underlying data is, and their obligation as the, for example, the D.C. Circuit held in the engine manufacturer.
And in what way was that data not available to the public in this case?
It wasn't in the proposed rule, and it wasn't in the docket, and it was almost impossible for the public to to find it themselves.
Okay, but almost impossible. So is it your position that if it's not in the docket or in the text, the notice is insufficient, even if it's possible to find it?
Yes. I mean, I guess if it was super, sorry to use these terms, if it was very, very easy to find, that might be a different case.
What's the standard? Is it a reasonableness standard or lower than that?
I think that it's the underlying data. I do think it's basically reasonable. The underlying data has to be available to provide for meaningful comment. So it's kind of different words, but I do think it comes down to reasonable.
Okay. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
I'll give you some rebuttal. Let's hear from the agency.
May it please the Court, Your Honor, Alan Greenberg, United States Department of Justice, representing the United States Environmental Protection Agency and its administrator. With me at council table is Randall Cherry, EPA Region 8, Office of Regional Counsel. The center here is challenging a limited EPA action. It's limited in several respects. Judicial review in this case is limited to EPA's approval of Colorado's SIP certification of its existing non-attainment new source review program that EPA previously approved. And it's limited in substance to a situation where the text of the state's regulatory program is consistent with, but does not exactly match, the federal regulatory language. In EPA's approval, EPA reasonably determined that the state's slightly different wording meets Clean Air Act federal requirements.
Counsel, are you suggesting that the limited nature of the action here, the approval of the SIP certification, changes the standards of review?
No, Your Honor. I'm not suggesting that. It's still an arbitrary and capricious standard of review of EPA's approval. What I'm suggesting, and this relates primarily to the notice issue, but also the broader context that this is something that's been in place for 30 years, is that notice was meaningfully given here because EPA, in its proposed rule, and the state submission identified the specific regulatory parts and sections that were the subject of the state submission and EPA's approval.
Surely this can't be optimal notice, though. I mean, it's like a scavenger hunt to find, the language that we're supposed to review, and, the public has to have some reasonable basis to know what the proposed agency action is. And I don't know, I just, in the age of internet links and the like, it just seems like it could be a lot easier on all of us to have a more complete package to review.
I would suggest, Your Honor, that in the age of internet, it's even less needed to provide the actual text. By identifying Regulation 3 Part D, an interested person can go to the state's website, can go to EPA's website, could go to a Westlaw or a Lexis website.
I'm suggesting I'd like to go to the EPA website and see what's being proposed for you to make a determination. I shouldn't have to go to Westlaw or Colorado, should I?
You shouldn't have to, and you can find it on EPA's website, or more importantly, this is a state regulatory program. You can go to the state's regulations. And I would emphasize here that the center has not identified any argument that they would have made now that they've seen the regulatory program.
The notice isn't for sophisticated repeat players like the center. It's for the public. And I don't want to beat a dead horse here. We're looking at reasonableness, but you know, the agency could do us all a favor by being a little more sensitive about identifying the documents that we need to review.
I would just remind the court that the standard is the Administrative Procedure Act and whether there was adequate notice for an interested person to participate in the rulemaking.
What and specific I think this, section are you referring to? Is it 553B and C?
I believe that is the
That's
section.
It's just not cited anywhere. No one cites it. So I'm trying to understand if we're writing this, what is it that we're looking at to help us discern how notice should be, what constitutes sufficient notice under the APA?
I believe it was cited in the center's opening brief, Your Honor.
Okay.
If you want, I can double check that.
Yeah, you know, turning to the temporary admissions, is the, what's the reason that it's equally as strict as the EPA provisions? I'm looking at potential to admit and secretary admissions. You know, what's your response to Mr. Ukiah's claim that the secondary admissions definition doesn't work here?
Well, it's a reading of the definition of potential to admit with the definition of secondary admissions. The definition of potential to admit refers to the emissions of pollutants under the source's physical and operational design, which focuses on the emissions from the source as it is physically built and operated in accordance with its design. The secondary emissions definition excludes emissions from construction activities, except when those emissions are from the source itself. Neither of those two definitions directly address the emissions associated with temporary emissions. And that's the words that the state of Colorado used and has used for 30 years to differentiate the emissions that are associated, in their mind, with the design of the facility, the physical and operational design, as opposed to the exclusion of construction. But neither of those definitions address the concept of temporary emissions. EPA in this rule interpreted its two definitions, potential to emit and secondary emissions, to state that the concept, the two definitions together, are meant to include continuous operating emissions of a stationary source and not temporary emissions or emissions associated from construction. And
well,
that is
problem,
a reason.
I'm sorry. The problem you have, though, is it specifically says it doesn't include secondary emissions. So what you're really doing is going straight to the secondary emissions discussion, Section 8, and deciding, all right, is a temporary emission a secondary emission? And I'm not seeing how you're getting there when you just look at the definition of secondary emissions. You've got to fit it within that. You're talking about the big picture, I understand, but when it comes down to it, you've got to fit it within that discussion.
I think we have to fit it in within the definition of potential to emit and secondary emissions, Your Honor.
Well, potential to emit seems to be quite unambiguous.
Well, it
and
deals
how,
with,
how is it? I mean, don't you have to have some ambiguity in order to interpret it in the first place?
Yes, you do, Your Honor. And we submit that the phrase physical and operational design, the emissions associated with physical and operational design, is ambiguous when it comes to temporary emissions. Are temporary emissions within the physical and operational design or not? Also taking into account that in general, construction emissions are not within that definition. And I would also want the court to step back and keep in mind that this is a set of regulations that governs all emission sources. It's not focused on oil and gas. And as Mr. Ukiah mentioned, and they mention in their brief on page 14, oil and gas sources are the rare source. He couldn't identify another source where you had emissions that come from the source itself. So what the state is addressing and what EPA is reviewing is a program that is trying to set up a structure for what emissions count in the potential to emit and what emissions are temporary and so don't count. And in this much broader context, temporary is ambiguous, and EPA reasonably drew a distinction between continuous operating emissions as opposed to temporary emissions.
Where does the word temporary appear in the regulations?
It does not appear in the federal regulations, which is why we contend there's an ambiguity here. The federal regulations don't address the situation of a temporary emission.
Well, it's just not there. I mean, the plain language says it isn't there.
It's not there.
And so you're construing, I mean, we're not construing Colorado's scheme. We're construing the regulations we have before us to determine if there's, if they, you know, in the words of Kaiser, if the law says what it says, it means what it means, right? I mean, I'm just not seeing it quite yet.
It's, yes, the regulations say what they say, but they say nothing about how a regulator is to treat temporary emissions. And those temporary emissions could be in the context of construction, or they could be temporary emissions during the operation of a facility or prior to the construction of a facility. The potential to emit,
well,
as
I've mentioned. All secondary emissions? Aren't those all secondary emissions? So aren't you still referring back to the definition of secondary emissions, which is very specific and doesn't say anything about temporary?
It does not say anything, it does not use the word temporary, but what secondary emissions is addressing is both, it talks about both operations and construction, but it is focusing on construction and excludes construction except from the source. There may be other temporary emissions, for example, in the state of Colorado's regs, they refer to exploration.
But doesn't the fact that the regs say construction and not something else actually undermine your position? That it's been contemplated what temporary might mean. And
what's been contemplated is secondary emissions that refer to both construction and operation and certain circumstances. But it does not address temporary emissions in the sense of a temporal phenomenon. Here are two, the federal definitions address activities. What the state of Colorado is doing is focusing on temporal, how long something occurs. That is not addressed in the federal regulations.
Which seems to make it broader. It seems to make the Colorado language broader. Temporary activities such as, isn't that the problematic language, such as construction or exploration? You've got a much more specific definition of secondary emissions, and you've got a broader definition in the Colorado language.
The definition is different. I acknowledge temporary is different, but the issue will be how it is implemented. And implementation is not an issue before this court here. How the state of Colorado actually implements its regulatory language in terms of temporary is separate from the issue before this court, which is the text of Colorado's regulations meeting the federal requirements? And EPA reasonably determined that that phrase temporary emissions does meet when you interpret those two definitions as contrasting continuous operating emissions, the operating emissions of the facility, versus temporary emissions, which aren't associated with the continuous operation.
Why didn't you and Colorado get together and just import the federal regulations into the CCR?
Well, if Colorado had done that, it would make this case much easier.
Yeah.
But the Clean Air Act sets up a system where the state is the lead in developing implementation plans. And EPA is in the reviewing role of making sure that whatever the state chooses meets federal requirements. Here, EPA reviewed the language that has been in place for 30 years, roughly, and determined that, yes, although the language is not exact, Colorado did not cut and paste from the federal regulations, it did sufficiently meet federal regulatory requirements, and under the APA, the court should defer to EPA's reasonable determination that the requirements have been met.
Does the fact that it's been in place for 20 years really matter to us, though? I mean,
it's context, Your Honor.
You got an objection to it. The EPA had an opportunity to say, oh, well, this has been in place for 20 years, but this is inconsistent with the federal regulations, and we need to do something about that.
Yes, it's true that the length of time it's been in place does not dispose of this case. It's context. EPA does have to, and did in this case, review the submission and determined, for the reasons set forth that we've discussed, that it met federal requirements.
All right, counsel, thank you. Your time's expired. Could you give 2.5 minutes for rebuttal? Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Your Honor. I urge the court to deny the petition for review.
All right, you may proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. On that issue of how long the regulations have been in place, and again, I think that is context, and it's the context that I started talking about. 5 times this permitting program has failed to bring us into attainment. So thinking that the 6th time is the charm doesn't really make any sense. In terms of just the public notice issue, and you could just Google the state regs, the problem is it's the particular version of the state regs that you need to know in order to meaningfully comment. Every time the state regs get changed, that doesn't automatically get in the SIP, the state implementation plan. That's called a SIP gap, when there's a difference between what's in the state regs and what's in the SIP. So you'd actually be misled if you just Googled the current state regulations. And sorry, I don't mean to use the trade name. But if you searched on the internet for you'd be misled. In terms of oil and gas being rare, I do agree, and I said that it's a rare example of a source in terms of how much emissions come from the source itself during construction. But it's not rare in the sense that there aren't many of these sources in Colorado. It is the problem. If you look at page 44 of the appendix, it breaks down where our ozone precursors are coming from. And there are 2 precursors. Oil and gas is number one. It's like 64% for volatile organic compounds. And it's number 2 for the other one. So we're not going to solve our ozone problem, which has been around for 15 years, without getting oil and gas under control. And again, Colorado has never issued a major source permit, but I'll end by explaining that one of the big advantages of major source permits is they have to offset their pollution, meaning if they're going to put out 50 tons, they have to reduce existing pollution by 60 tons. So the needle's finally moving in the right direction. I appreciate your time, and I'm happy.
All right, counsel, your time has expired, and you are excused. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.